Black Talk Radio.
Just got back to Barkcop Manor. I've been at the repair shop for my car. And I'm just thinking how unfair it was that an important, nationally and globally imperative website like BarkCop.com could be shut down for a day because the light comes on my dashboard says check engine. So I take it into the shop and I say, huh? It says what? I said, well, I don't know. It's the little light came on. It's the shape of an engine. And the light came on, so fix it. I looked it up in the book, and they said, oh, grave damage to your car if you drive it with this light on. It's like, yeah, blow me. So I'm forced to take it out there. Takes them a couple hours to figure out what the deal is. Takes them a couple hours to fix it. Takes them a couple hours to find my paperwork. I'm going, hey, lady, I got shit to do. Come on. So finally they took my credit card impression and said, trust us. We'll do you right. So they let me go without having never found the paperwork. But that's not even what I'm talking about today. On the way home, I hear this lady call the Ed Schultz Show. And I'm real proud that I remembered Ed's last name because I always say that Ed guy. And most of you might not know who Ed Schultz is, but if you own XM Radio, Ed Schultz is the guy they put on in place of Randy Rhoads. They take off the best I've ever seen in my whole life. Randy Rhoads, you can't get any better than that. Mike Malloy's my good friend. Al Frang is a good guy. I'd like to think that I have something to add to the mix, but Randy Rhoads, she's got to be the Chris Rock of the left. She's just in her own ballpark. Can't nobody touch Randy Rhoads. But anyway, they take Randy Rhoads off to put Ed Schultz on, and at first I thought it was a conspiracy. Why put on the very best when you could put on Ed Schultz instead? But that's not fair to Ed Schultz. Ed Schultz is very, very good. He just met Randy Rhoads. Neither am I. Neither is Mike. Neither is Al. Neither is nobody. Which is to coin a phrase. But that's not what I'm talking about today. This lady calls Ed Schultz and says, I'm pissed as hell. This was it. And she said she went to some office supply. No, some like Lowe's or Best Buy. No. One of those home improvement deals. Doesn't matter. Anyway, she gets out of her car, and there's these three dudes standing there with clipboards in their hands. And she watched them walk up, some guy getting out of his car, and they say, are you a registered voter? He says, yeah. They said, you're a Republican? He said, yeah. They said, oh, goody, goody. Can you sign this petition here to put Nader on the ballot? I don't know which state she was calling from. And she said that really pissed her off. So she went into the store, did her shopping on the way out. These guys approach her. Said, you're a registered voter? She said, yeah. And they said, you want to help us put Nader on the ballot so Bush can win illegally? And she said, no, you sons of bitches, get away from me. But that got me to thinking. And yes, there are times when old Bart does actually think. If Bush needs Nader to win, which apparently they do, because they're putting a whole lot of money and effort into getting Nader on the ballot, that would seem to indicate, okay, they can't win without Nader. So Bush plus Nader, they think, might be able to defeat Kerry. So that means Bush alone can't defeat Kerry, which means Bush has less than 50% of the vote. Now, if Bush has less than 50% of the vote, that means he's out of the mainstream. That means Bush is some minority figure. He's some minority representative that handles just the super rich, that does not speak for the majority of Americans, never has. Al Gore and John Kerry speak for the majority of Americans. But Bush speaks for a minority. He's out of the mainstream. He can't help it. He can't get in the mainstream. No matter what he does, he can't convince the majority of America to back him up. So they got to go look for help, and they're getting it from Ralph Nader. Now, you weirdos out there who think voting for Nader is somehow some greater cause, you need to do some kind of mental self-checkup there and realize that all you're doing is putting Bush in office for 4 more years. You've got to stop that. You've got to realign your thinking. You've got to get off this idiotic Nader bandwagon. And by the way, if there's some Nader out there who wants to debate, I promise I'll use a smaller boot. If you want to come into the debate room, well, see, the debate's not even going to last 90 seconds, so you're going to come in and tell me how things ought to be. And that's not what we got. If you're in some foxhole in Iraq and bullets are flying over your head, it doesn't do a whole lot of good to say, I ought not to be in Iraq. Well, goddammit, you're in Iraq, and those bullets are flying over your head, so you've got to worry about getting your ass out of the foxhole and back to America a whole lot more than asking yourselves, why are we here? You know what I mean? That's the same thing we got with Nader. Don't tell me how things ought to be. Don't tell me how America ought to have 3 parties or 5 parties or 25 parties. That's not what we have. You got to deal in the here and now. You got to deal with the facts that are in front of you at this moment. this pie in the sky, how things ought to be. Hey, let's talk about that in February 2005. That'll give you 46 months to muck around with stuff. But right now is not the time. We got to get this monster out of office before he kills more soldiers, before he alienates more allies, before he does so much more harm to America's reputation, America's pocketbook, the Treasury, the right to life, the Constitution, the Supreme Court, the rest of your lives. You people got to stop with this Nader bullshit, and you got to get on the bandwagon. And I'm not going to sugarcoat it for you. You want me to beg you to come over? Uh-uh. If you want to put Bush in power, if you want to let Bush ruin, Christ, you people on the left, you Naderites, you think that you're somehow helping to put Bush in power. How is it helping anything to give the monster, even if you think that Kerry and Bush are the two monsters? Well, every one of you admits that Bush is the bigger monster, so why are you helping the bigger monster? That's just idiocy. It's illogic. It's a proof of insanity. You got to knock that shit off. So, yeah, bottom line here, the reason they want Nader on the ballot is because they can't win being the minority outside the mainstream. And if a Democrat could use his head and bring that up, when, you know, in the debates, and all between now and the election, Bush is going to be screaming what a weirdo outsider Kerry is. Well, hey, we won the last three popular votes for president. Nothing can change that. If Kerry could remember that, but no, he's too busy wanting to pat George on the back and be a nice guy and agree with him on Iraq. I hate that. It would be nice if we had a candidate that was fighting back. Please, Mr. Kerry, fight back. Use that line about Bush being out of the mainstream. Let's get a representative of the majority back in the White House. Am I asking too much? I don't think so.
The way that I wanna live. It's my prerogative. I can do just what I feel. It's my prerogative. Nobody can tell me what to do. It's my prerogative. Cause what I'm doing, I'm doing for you. Now,
don't get me wrong, I'm really not suited. Ego trips is not my thing. All these strange relationships really get me down. Nothing wrong with spreading myself around.
Everybody's talking all this stuff about me.
Yeah.
Just let me live.
Tell me why.
I don't need permission.
I don't need
my own decision.
My own decision.
That's my prerogative.
It's my prerogative.
I can do what I want to do.
It's my prerogative.
Bill Maher mentioned this in show 51. This is show 52. I want to build on that. Big headline, USA Today, same damn newspaper in that waiting room. Makes me think I ought to go to the waiting room more often. Because when I got a big, that whole Time magazine and some other stuff I got out of the last issue that was all written in my head in the doctor's office. And I had to wait forever to get my knee lanced. Waiting for my damn car to get fixed. I'm in the waiting room reading this USA Today. Big headline, Democrats' voice will be heard at the GOP convention. They're talking about that shit, Zell Miller. But what they did, it says here that he was a Bush basher in 1992. So wouldn't it be nice if the Democrats would go back and find out what Zell Miller said about Bush Sr. in 92 and play those quotes? But no, they can't think of that. Watch for John Stewart to come up with that, because he's got the interests of the people at heart. Corporate John Stewart, working for the little guy, go figure. But the Democrats, no, they can't figure it out. No, they're hopeless and inept. They can't figure out what to do. The idea of getting Zell Miller's quotes from 92 and playing them now. Oh, who would have thought of that? What kind of genius came up with that? Gee, well, you can't expect us to think of that. Jesus, why don't we fight back? Okay, the reason I mention this, because the USA Today, August 20th, printed the lineup for the NaziCon convention here come August 30th. Here we go. The Republican National Convention in New York, August 30th, September 2, will feature a Democrat, Georgia traitor, Zell Miller, as keynote speaker. Keynote speaker. They made this somebody's a keynote speaker. And will include a tribute to the 9/11 victims that Bush stuck in the ass. Oh, last night I'm watching Chris the Whore on MSGOP, and he's going on and on and on about how great Bush was for picking up that bullhorn and saying, the people that knocked down these buildings are going to hear from all of us soon. He talked about how great that was. He said it was the greatest spontaneous, the greatest spontaneous political utterance in his whole history, he said. Chris Matthews never in all of history has heard of anything as great as that. But the son of a bitch, what did he do? Bush said, the people that knocked these buildings down are going to hear from all of us real soon. What did he do? He forgot their promise and went after Saddam. And anyone that calls him on it is a traitor and a backstabber and doesn't like America. And the Democrats, they just take it. Anyway, back to the story. Taking the stage, Monday, August 30th, theme, Courage of a Nation. Tributes to victims, survivors, and heroes of September 11th and the U.S. troops fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan. Well, it would be nice if they're not going to do it. Never mind. Speakers, former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani, who we all know is pro-choice. So their first speaker is going to be pro-choice Mayor Giuliani. Second up is Mayor Michael Bloomberg, who formerly is a Democrat. I don't know, but I'll bet money he's pro-choice. Next up, Senator John McCain, who is ashamed of his president for running those crooked and misleading Swift boat ads. Now that's Monday. Here comes Tuesday. Theme, compassion of the American people. Yeah, we are, but the president's not. Focus on Bush's compassionate conservatism and agenda. Oh, please, what a hand job. Bush has fucked everybody he could. Compassionate my ass. Speakers, First Lady Laura Bush, who is pro-choice, Secretary Rod Page, who, is he the holdover from the Clinton administration? He might be. He's probably pro-choice. And California Governor Arnold the Musclehead, he's pro-choice. So far we've got 5 out of 6 speakers are pro-choice at the Democrat convention. Bill Maher mentioned last time about that's not who they are. Well, see, this is not who they are. The 5 of the first 6 speakers at the convention are pro-choice. They're baby killers. 86% of the speakers the first 2 nights are baby killers. That's not who they are. That's not who the GOP is. They're lying. Will anybody call them on that? Surely not a Democrat. Surely not the press. So it's up to the websites and John Stewart to call them on that. Them sons of bitches. And Bill Maher. From now on, whenever I mention John Stewart, Bill Maher's right in there too. Wednesday, September 1st. Theme is Land of Opportunity. Well, it was before the regime took over and froze everybody out. Emphasis on Bush's tax cuts that have not done a goddamn thing to help anybody but the super rich. Other economic policy speakers, Zell Miller, is Zell Miller pro-choice? He might be. And Vice President Cheney, who is adamantly anti-choice. Fuck those women. They don't know what's good for them. Fuck them. I'll tell them what to do. Me and Jim Inhofe and Tom DeLay and Newt Gingrich are going to get together and decide what women can do with their bodies. So, y'all, you women, just get the hell in line if you know what's good for you. So that's Wednesday. Now here comes Thursday. Theme, a safer world and a more hopeful America. Highlighting Bush's war on terrorism and his plans for a second term. Well, let's mention that his war on terrorism has been a giant failure. What has he done? He's done nothing but create the largest recruiting ground in the world for these hand-job terrorists to come in and blow some shit up. The world has not gotten safer. We attacked the wrong country. We attacked a Muslim country because we had 1/100th of an excuse. We haven't gotten safer in the slightest. All Bush did was attack a country that was seemingly innocent in the Muslim world, and we attacked him for no reason other than Bush gave his personal guarantee and put his reputation on the line that Saddam had these big, big WMDs and was ready to launch any second. Now, it seems to me when a president puts his ass on the line, when he puts his reputation on the line, when he stakes his administration on the fact that they have WMDs, and then there are none, well, he ought to be a colossal failure now. If we had a press or some Democrats that were fighting back, somebody might mention that. But no, all he's done is set the Middle East on fire. You thought it was on fire last year or 2 years ago. Boy, it is triple on fire now just because the monkey saw some oil. The little boy in the sandbox saw something in the other boy's sandbox that he wanted, and he's got a big bully of an army behind him, so he went and took it. A couple of weeks ago, we played a thing of some Bill Maher show. It was some 9 or 10-year-old screaming into the camera, "We will kill the Americans. We will rise up. We will use all our power. We will cut the heads off the Americans." I mean, millions and millions of little kids, they're learning. America is the enemy. We must die to kill the enemy. We must die to kill America. That's all they can think of. And you say, oh, that's what they thought 5, 10 years ago. No, not like today. They're lining up. suicide bombers line up here. All the suicide bombers from A through E line up over here. All the suicide bombers from F through L line up over here. I mean, that's what we got now. Now we got a massive, monster, worldwide problem that we didn't even have on September 12th, 2001. This is all Bush's fault. He has screwed America. Just think how different it would have been if the votes in America counted and Al Gore had been president. If Osama had been lucky enough to get by Al Gore, who would not be asleep and not taking 40% of his time on vacation. 40% of Bush's administration, he's on vacation. He's in Crawford fucking with those cows. I hate that. You know, no matter what, they say they're the same bullshit. Gore would not be on vacation 40% of the time, and if they came to Gore and said, we got a problem, Osama's heading his way with airplanes, we don't know exactly what he's going to do, he would have put out alerts. The FAA and the mayors and the airlines and the airports, he would have told everybody, hey, double up on security, double up on this and that. And when they got the first indications that we had hijackings going on, I believe President Gore would have notified the military to be on the alert, et cetera, et cetera. But no, the idiot went on vacation. He went and talked to the damn cows, sipping lemonade in Crawford while his country was being attacked, reading a damn goat story in Florida, the son of a... But anyway, that's what we got right now. President Gore would not have attacked Iraq. He would not... Let's all remember, we had Osama cornered, everyone thinks, in Bora Bora. But Bush said, no, let's stop that. We don't want Osama. We want Saddam. He's the big danger. Saddam terror. Saddam 9-11. Saddam terror. Saddam 9-11. Saddam, Saddam. Remember how he did that? And, oh, sure, they'll deny it now, but no. It was all Saddam 9-11. Saddam 9-11. Here we come. We got to get Saddam. Here comes Saddam. Going to launch. Got to get Saddam. He was over and over again and again, constant with that. And the media stood right behind him, and so did the Democrats. The Democrats stood there and said, go, George, you're my president. You're the war president. Go get him, George. You're the man. Go, George, go. Now what do we got? We got the Middle East in triple flames. We got millions of kids would do anything if they could just die to kill some Americans. Thanks, George. Meanwhile, we still got Osama over here. Osama and his whole gang, they're still running wild. Now, you know, we've got the original problem and the idiot that stole power. Now we've got double the problem. We got to worry about all the Muslims now, whereas before all we had to worry about was the crazy ones. Way to go, George. You turned the moderate Arabs into suicidal Arabs. Thank you, George. Way to go. Of course, now it was worth it for the Bush family. They got their money, that 2 million barrels of oil. You know, still nobody's talking about that. I saw a thing waiting in that same damn mechanics deal. They're saying now it's 1.7 million barrels of oil. Well, gee, 1.7 times $50 a barrel, that comes out to 85 million a day. We're still back to the 85 million a day. 85 million a day. Say it with me. 85 million a day. 85 million a day. That's what the BFEE is stealing on top of everything else, on top of all the Halliburton money, on top of all the raw materials that they stole out of Iraq, outside of all the antiques and the artifacts from 3, 4, 5, 6,000 years ago that they stole out of Iraq. All the Saddam's gold, Saddam's cash, all the palaces. You know, Bush is going to rent those palaces out to people. By invading Iraq, we canceled the debts that Saddam owed to all those other people. I guess Bush is somehow going to weasel his way into that. Bush is stealing billions, hundreds of billions, and the Democrats don't mind, the press don't mind. Oh, I think we ought to check in the Travelgate some more. We might have overlooked something from 9 years ago. Let's go back and look at Clinton and Travelgate, because Travelgate's so damn important. But no, they want to tell you that Gore would have bungled this war, but no, Gore would have gone after the people who attacked us. Bush lied. He stood on the bodies in New York with that bullhorn in his hand, and he said, we're going to avenge this wrong, and then he went after Saddam to avenge his daddy and steal some oil, and how many people even talk about that? When the Republicans are in New York next week, are we going to hear that from anybody? Is anybody going to say what happened to the New York promise? What happened to the New York promise, George? You swore you were going to go get Osama, but instead you went after Saddam. You couldn't get the hard one, so you took the easy one. Like Bill Maher says, we dropped our car keys in the garage. But no, we're looking for them in the living room because the light is better there. That's what Bush did. He had to get somebody. America wanted somebody to pay. So let's pretend that guy's responsible over there. Yeah, that guy. No, Biden. Yeah, that guy. He's the one that caused all this. Not Osama. Not Al-Qaeda. No. It was Saddam because we know where he's at. And America fell for it. Will the press and the Democrats remain quiet next week in New York? Are they going to remind everybody about the New York vow that Bush took? that Chris Matthews gets wood whenever he sees the film of that? Is anybody going to remind America that Bush made a solemn vow and then broke it to steal some oil? Will anyone bring that up?
Somewhere along the lonely road I have tried to find ya. Day after day on that windy road I had walked behind ya. Need to live and I've been forgiven since you taken your place in my heart.
Old friend Bev Harris was interviewed again, this time by Al Franken on Air America Radio. I'm certainly not going to play the whole thing here. If you want to dig for it, something else. Someone sent me a link to the Air America archives. I made a big thing about it. If you go to the alt binaries, something, something, spoken word, news group, some fella has been listing all the shows. He records all the shows and he's been posting them so people around the world can hear it. And someone said, duh, Bart, just go to Air America Archives, and it's right there. So I went to airamerica.com. I clicked on the archives. It says coming soon. I hate to say it, but typical liberals, we can't get a damn thing right no matter what happens. If it's screwed up, you know it's the liberal side. If it's done right, you know it's the Republicans. But if you go to airamerica.com and click on the archives button, it says coming soon. But somewhere, someone sent me the link, and boy, you click on it, and there they all are. So somewhere, there's a secret trick to get into the archives that I don't know, that's not posted on the website. But if you want to hear this whole crazy interview, go to the Air America archives and check it out. I heard the interview live, and Bev Harris, as always, made absolutely no sense at all. It's amazing. Like I say, I'm going to play a clip of it here, but we don't have time for you to see the metamorphosis. This is what I think happened. Al Franken started out all excited talking to her. Holy cow, we're going to talk to the voting lady expert, the Diebold expert. Well, they call it Diebold, who knows. We're going to talk to the expert, the lady that knows all, sees all. So he asked her, tell us what you're up to. Oh, I'm in Washington to get another document dump. And he said, oh, what is it? And he goes, well, I don't know, I've gotten so many hundreds of thousands so far. And he says, well, what are you going to get today? She said, you never know, it's like a box of chocolates, you just don't know. I mean, that's Bev Harris in a nutshell. No matter what question you ask her, she leaves herself a loophole the size of the Condoleezza Rice Chevron tanker. No matter what you ask her, it's, oh, could be anything. You know, it's always a big mystery. It's always around the corner. It's always coming soon with Bev Harris. Anyway, as Al Franken starts the interview, he's really gung-ho with her. But then he realizes every time he asks her a question, he gets one of these fuzzy answers. How do people get into the Diebold machines and screw it up? Oh, anyone can get in. Well, how? Well, there's all kinds of ways. We'll name a couple. Well, you can tamper it. You can phone in. You can dial in. You can open the back. Well, who can do this? Well, anybody can. Well, anybody? Well, yeah, anybody. My biggest problem with Bev, God knows we want her to be right, but she is unable to explain herself. She's somehow been lucky enough to position herself as the go-to lady in the entire planet. When you want to talk about voting fraud, you go to talk to Bev Harris. And I'll tell you what the danger is there. Everybody knows who Jim Hatfield is. The way I understand the story, Karl Rove and some other people in the Bush camp talked to Jim Hatfield and told him off the record that Bush had all these cocaine problems. They told him that knowing that he had served time for attempted murder. So no matter what message this guy has, the messenger is so flawed that since the day, I think it was the Dallas Morning Herald, broke the story that Jim Hatfield was convicted of attempted murder, the second that story hit, every cocaine charge about George Bush was deemed illegitimate and not worthy of discussion from that day forward. And I'm afraid that's what we got with Bev Harris. I don't think she's a plant, even though at one time in 98 she sold Clinton cigars, made some money on the internet, they say, selling Clinton cigars, which scares me, tells me a little something about her motives. But Bev Harris has become the go-to lady when you're going to find out about voter fraud. But when you get her, this is what Al Franken ran into. Al Franken started interviewing her. And you could just tell as the interview goes on, he's getting more and more frustrated. Basically, he ended up saying, "Lady, say something," is basically how he ended up. And finally, he went to commercial. When he came back, there was not a word of her. It seemed to me like during the interview, during the live interview, live on the air, he discovered she was a complete loon. And so all he could do at that point was bail out. You know, I think his closing question was, "Tell us what we can do." And she said, do this, do that, vote by absentee, this and that. But the idea, every time you ask Bev Harris a question, you get something besides an answer. You get a reason why she can't answer you. So I'm going to play you a little clip here. This is the Bev Harris interview with Al Franken. If you want to dig for it, if you somehow magically can come up with the archives, it was the last hour of Monday's show, Monday the 23rd. So here's a little clip.
Now, these machines can have a negative count. You can have, like, a negative 15. That would be suspicious, wouldn't it?
One would think that shouldn't be something you should do, but unfortunately that is possible with the Diebold system.
Now, did that end up in the final tally? This is a pretty sensational charge.
They caught it, but, you know, here's what happened. They needed a 16,000 vote spread, additional spread, in order to call the election. A 16,000 vote spread was manipulated in unauthorized into a Diebold voting system in Volusia County. 9 minutes later, all of the networks called the election for Bush. He then privately Gore then privately conceded to Bush, and he was actually only two blocks away from conceding to the nation when they discovered the negative 16,000 votes.
Now, if I understand English correctly, and assuming the words that came out of her mouth is what she meant to say, she said that Gore was two blocks from conceding, which I understand that to be he was in the car about to go to the studio or whatever, when she says Gore discovered the 16,000 negative votes. Now, if Gore discovered massive vote tampering fraud, if he had proof of it in his hand, why did he remain silent? I mean, it's just like a Democrat to take it and lay down, but if Gore was about to lose the presidency because of a fraud and he had the proof in his hand, why not mention it? Why not bring up the subject? He never did. So it makes me wonder if Bev knows what she's talking about.
And he pulled back his withdrawal. So, you know, nobody really knows what would have happened if he would have conceded to the nation. They may not have ever had a Florida meltdown.
Now, was this a hacking? Is this a hacking into the machine? Is that how you get the negative vote? I mean, are these machines vulnerable to hacking?
Oh, they're extremely vulnerable to both outside and inside. And the inside attacks are a very big worry, by the way, because we've been able to document that at least 10,000 people have access to the main mother central tabulators, which is like the mothership that all the votes come into from all of the different polling places.
Well, now, wait, does that make any sense? If you're the Republicans trying to coordinate an election theft with the Diebold people, do you want 10,000 fingers in the pie? Do you want 10,000 cooks in the kitchen? That makes no sense. It just can't hardly be true. If you're trying to rig an election, and what would the point be if not to, you can't have 10,000 people in there monkeying. What if they all put the yeast in, to quote the Three Stooges? What if 10,000 people all put in a negative 16,000 votes, and it turns out Bush wins Florida 4 million votes to a negative 2 million? Don't you think that would raise some eyebrows to have 10,000 people dicking with the machine? It just doesn't ring true. It rings stupid. And I hate to see the ball carrier for the vote fraud be that stupid. It makes no sense.
Huge numbers of people have inside access, and by that I mean permission to sit down at the tower and, you know, the passwords to change the votes. And those particular systems, the central tabulator systems, control up to 1 million votes at once. So access there is a problem. And then tens of thousands more poll workers have a level of inside access when they have the access phone numbers to dial into the modems to these machines, because the phone numbers can get them into the central tabulator also and give them access to those 1 million votes.
Okay, you're scaring the bejesus out of me. Now, these at least poll workers from both sides? Is this?
Yeah.
Is there a check on this? Is there any?
Yeah, whoever gets there first. I mean,
You laugh. You know, I'm not laughing. No.
Because, frankly, if I didn't, I would just be depressed all the time because the problem is enormous. And we still haven't taken any of the steps we need in order to solve it.
So that was the most recent Bev Harris interview. And like I say, everybody is with Bev Harris's idea. Everybody knows that this Diebold, whatever it is, needs to be stopped. We've got to have a paper trail so when there's a hiccup, someone has a clue what to do. But if you remember the last time we talked about this, Bev Harris was interviewed by someone else on Air America Radio, and she said, they asked her what she needed. She said, I need thousands and thousands of volunteers all over the country to be ready to move on Election Day. And the interviewer said, what will they be doing? She said, can't tell you. It's a secret. So, yeah, I'm sure she's going to get thousands of secret volunteers to do the secret job at the secret location on the secret time. I mean, it's just so stupid. The Jim Hetfield analogy, I think we are vulnerable to having this big an issue helmed by somebody of Bev Harris's stature. I don't know what her true motives are. They might be pure, but I know she does an extremely ineffective job of presenting her case. When you ask her to explain the whole Diebold thing, it's, well, there's a backup thing, and there's this deal, and there's this guy, and if someone can do this, and you never know what about that, and this could happen. And she just gives you the biggest mess of gobbledygook. She makes me sound sane. So let's hope somehow the issue makes itself without Bev, or somehow she comes around and presents herself in a little more cohesive manner. It would be nice, because I'm afraid we're going to get Hetfield on this. Hetfield ED. Because if Bev turns out to be the loon, some suspect her. I don't know her well enough to call her a loon. I had a couple of run-ins with her. She sent me some hot, nasty emails. And you know how I am when I get a hot, nasty email. I send you one that's double hot and double nastier back. And it kind of died pretty quick. But I don't know Bev well enough to slander her. But I just feel very. But I'm worried that this extremely important issue in her hands is going to end up the way the cocaine Hetfield issue ended up. And I'm not talking about suicide for Bev. I'm just saying the whole issue got diffused because the messenger was flawed, and we don't want that to happen a second time.
He may be a rube from Knuckle Drag, Oklahoma, but he's armed with his tequila and the truth to give the red ass to any ditto monkey out there. It's Bart Cop Radio.